This is the House Special Committee on Energy. Time is 10:21 on Tuesday, January 31st. Present are Vice Chair Sponholz, Representative Klayman, Representative Westlake, Representative Johnson, Representative Johnston, and Representative Rauscher, and myself, Chair Wohl. If you can turn off your cell phones, and any notes or communication should go through committee staff Rob Earl over there. And our only item of business today is HB 81, More Energy Efficient Buildings Act. And we have present Representative Christ Tompkins, and staff, if you could come forward, please, and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, District 35, Rural Southeast Alaska. And this piece of legislation passed all three committees of referral in the previous legislature with, I believe, all or nearly unanimous do pass recommendations. And we're back for an encore because it seems to us like good common sense legislation that promotes energy efficiency in Alaska. So the bill in a nutshell takes an existing program, it's called the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund, which is an authorized program under the auspices, I believe, of AHFC. Barrett's going to punch me in the ribs if I say anything wrong. And it's been created for the public sector, primarily school districts, municipalities, state agencies, to take advantage of, to make energy efficiency investments. And it's a clever structure. The idea is that a public entity can identify energy efficiency improvements, borrow money, finance money from this revolving loan fund, make those energy efficiency improvements, and the savings, the marginal savings from insulation or replaced windows or doors or whatever, that marginal savings will then constitute the repayment of the borrowed money. And so it sort of doubles as no net loss, but at the end of the term, you have a more energy efficient building and you're paying less energy costs once you've paid everything back. I hope that made sense, but that's the concept in a nutshell. So the idea behind this bill is running with the sort of belief that energy efficiency is a good common sense thing, particularly in Alaska with a climate like ours, and acknowledges that it comes from personal conversations, that there are a lot of nonprofit entities, from churches to soup kitchens to arts and culture organizations to tribal entities, including regional housing authorities, that have a lot of need for energy efficiency improvements as well, just as our school districts and our municipalities do. And it would make sense to broaden the eligibility for these other entities to be able to access this financing. And that's what the bill does, basically. I can stop right there and wish for the chair questions.
We have some questions. Representative Johnston?
First of all, what's the size of this fund? Do you know?
Yeah. Representative Johnston, through the chair, or Johnston, I'll enunciate a T here with clarity, given the membership of the committee. It's not actually a sitting pot of money, unlike, say, the commercial fishing revolving loan fund or the agriculture revolving loan fund in Alaska, but it's a bond authorized program, and from memory, I want to say it's up to $200 million, but I'll defer to Barrett here just to make sure we get a more accurate number.
Hi, committee. My name is Barrett. I'm staff rep Christ Tompkins. It's been authorized for up to $250 million in bonding authority.
And through the chair, do you know currently what is out as far as loans and for public? Do you know the current?
Yes. Through the chair, sorry, Barrett Wilbur, forgot to include my last name. Staff rep. Rep. Christ Tompkins. Currently, one loan has been closed through the program. It was offered to the city of Galena in December of 2016 for about $2.4 million. I could elaborate if you would like.
If I may, maybe just building on Barrett's response, generally speaking, the program has been very underused by the entities that are currently able to access it, those being municipalities, school districts, and state agencies. Part of the reason that has been the case, at least from our conversations with people familiar with the program and who work in energy efficiency in Alaska, is that for the better part of the last decade, there's been a gravy train of free money, namely legislative grants. So why would anyone borrow money when you can get it for free in the form of grants? So there's maybe some anticipation that there's going to be more activity, and it's maybe not coincidental that this loan to the city of Galena was last month. But relatively speaking to $250 million in bonding authority, obviously we're not even 1% of the way there. I guess this is just a good segue for maybe further sort of elaboration on the intent behind the legislation. Public entities obviously have need. What inspired this legislation is talking with a nonprofit organization in Sitka, where I'm from, and they, you know, like a lot of nonprofits, aren't exactly rolling in cash. And, you know, they're very program and mission focused, but don't have huge cash reserves. And they were in an old, kind of dilapidated building, and they had an energy audit done, and there were a number of energy efficiency improvements identified in that audit that had payback periods as low as 3 years. I mean, just like kind of like smack your skull, kind of obvious stuff, but they're so cash poor that they didn't have the ability to front that investment to make these really low-hanging energy efficiency improvements. And so even $25,000 or $50,000 in financing would make a huge difference for them, which, and $25,000 to $50,000 is obviously not even like one, it's probably getting to 1% of 1% of the overall fund. So the point is, for the cash poor organizations, like a lot of those that would be made eligible by this legislation, this would have disproportionate impact and be able to make an existing program do much, much more good than it's presently doing. Not to be verbose, but I thought it was an important piece to add.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? I have a question. You mentioned that the loan gets repaid by savings realized by the improvements. Is this done through audit, and is it sort of an exact measurement, or is it a best approximation? And also, what if conditions change such that, say, the price of heating oil goes up so that the savings aren't the same as they were calculated at the beginning?
Chair Wolf, for the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, District 35. Two very good questions. To the first of the questions, my recollection, again, Barrett can correct me, is that you have to have an audit done in order to qualify for financing. So you kind of have to have an expert come in and basically prove up the details and the numbers on the energy efficiency improvements that you're claiming in order to get financing. The second part of your question, that's a great question, and I guess I'm going to defer to Ms. Wilbur here. We also have folks from HFC on the phone who may have insight to that.
Through the chair, Barrett Wilbur, staff to Rep. Christ Tompkins. I asked the same question of Stacey Schubert, who is the head of HFC, earlier this week, and she echoed Rep. Christ Tompkins' statements that, yes, in order to get one of these loans, you have to go through an energy audit certified by a third party. And she said all of their, kind of all of the repayable costs had to be certified through a third party. So no one could borrow money, say that they were going to, for instance, replace all the windows in their building and then use that money for something else. In terms of if things change for the loan period, she probably would have a more specific answer to that than I would. I think there's an amortization period 1 year after the loan is disbursed to whoever may be requesting it, but I think probably I would lean on her answer.
Okay, well,
try to give one.
Thank you. And we actually have a question from the committee.
Thank you, and through the chair, thanks. I'm wondering, I am looking through this, and power cost equalization comes to mind. Now, if we start to do these, and it's for nonprofits over there, is one of the unintended consequences going to be shifting because the prices go up as you get off electricity? Is that cost going to be shifted onto the community as a result of unintended consequences, if you will?
Representative Westlake, through the chair, maybe I'll sort of try to repeat the logic to make sure I understand it. If you have nonprofits in a community with a high price of energy that is PCE eligible, by making energy efficiency improvements and reducing consumption in that community, the fixed costs will be spread over less users and less consumption, thereby increasing the cost of energy in that community. Is that the thinking that you're putting forward?
Well, thank you. I've done hands-on on something similar, and what we did find is if you take that and you're now paying, let's say, to an AVAC, a Alaska Village Cooperative out there, is you're taking a portion of their funding. Now they're operating at a higher cost, so the prices escalate. I'm wondering, is this addressed in here?
Representative Westlake, through the chair, I think the short and blunt answer is no, and I would argue there may not be cause for it to be. I mean, this is sort of the paradox of power cost equalization, is that there's no incentive for conservation, and I think that's highlighted with this bill or really any energy conservation measures. And I mean, I've grappled with that with PCE eligible communities that I represent. In Greenwood, energy efficiency improvements are endeavored, and the fixed cost of energy there is then spread over less people, and it's just kind of an oxymoron of Alaska. I guess I would just suggest that, you know, if you've got a village that's PCE eligible and their energy efficiency improvements made, and a church or the tribal, you know, community center or tribal building or whatever, I imagine the relative change in energy consumption would be so de minimis it wouldn't appreciably change the cost of energy in the community. But I mean, logically, I think that is a cause and consequence that you've identified.
And I think some of these discussions about PCE and energy efficiency we will take up later with a PCE presentation separate from your legislation. And we have a question from the committee, Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, through the chair, I guess I do have a question, and I just was looking through your statement, and I'm familiar with this term ARLF, right? This is the ARLF, right? That's an acronym that I'm familiar with. But my understanding is ARLF was set up really for municipal government and for schools to make sure that the buildings and municipal governments and schools were energy efficient, because it kept the state from having to expend more monies in, or municipal government. It's really a direct benefit to the taxpayers by not having to pay so much in power costs. So what I'm wondering is, if we are putting this out for nonprofits, 501c3, and also I guess tribal governments, is all the municipal and school buildings already been, has this already been addressed? Because I'm thinking back to Palmer, and I'm thinking that I'm not sure that all of their buildings are particularly have been addressed under this fund. And so I guess my concern in our fiscal climate is that we maybe have some schools, some of our own that we need to address before we get into making this money available to other places.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I think it's a really good point. I mean, to directly answer your question, it was created for municipalities and school districts, and they haven't used it at all, with one exception, the city of Galena last month. But again, I think maybe part of the reason for that is, when I first came into office in 2012, I was like, oh, this is like a great sounding program. There's high cost of energy in my district. There's a lot of cash strapped municipalities and school districts. I mean, they should be using this. And I went to literally every superintendent and city administrator systematically and said, hey guys, there's this program out there. If you don't like your high cost of energy, you should check this out. And there was a lot of, I mean, not there what, there was universal sort of reluctance to investigate it because of sort of a culture of looking towards grants, which is rational. I mean, again, why borrow money if you can get it for free? That could be changing in the future. And so I think your question is very prescient. And through the committee process last year, speaking to this exact consideration, we added language that if there does sort of become a avalanche of interest in this over the next few years, because obviously we aren't going to have a capital budget that's terribly generous in coming years. So if there is an avalanche of interest, that the entities that this was originally created for, municipalities, school districts, and state agencies, will have sort of pole position and first priority to access financing, and nonprofits and these other entities will sort of be second in line, if you will. So it shouldn't ever jeopardize public entities from being financed.
Follow up, Representative Johnson.
So you've already said there's cash-strapped groups that are looking for money. I mean, what are we going to foreclose against, you know, the local church? I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, we're talking about giving a loan program that's going to be made available, and I don't know if it's going to be stringent as far as requirements, but I can't even imagine trying to foreclose against the, you know, the local Head Start building or something like that. So, I mean, and we've already talked about them not having monies. Have you thought about that piece of it?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I mean, I think that's a good point. And Ms. Schubert may have further thoughts on this, sort of coming from it from a more administration point of view. I think the audit sort of offers a somewhat robust protection against that, because there will be demonstrated savings, which would be converted into the sort of cash stream that can pay back the loan and finance the energy efficiency improvements. So absent that, if the audit were not there, I think I would maybe take much greater pause. But because there will be demonstrated savings and therefore cash that should exist that should be able to repay the loan, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I suspect AHFC will exercise all appropriate diligence, given that they would be on the hook for this.
Final follow-up.
Another follow-up. Yes. Sure. Go ahead.
Well, I guess I would like I would like to think they would do. Be, you know, I'd like to have full confidence, but unfortunately, and I know in our community, we've had a number of defaults. Nonprofits. I mean, it's when you start getting into public financing of this quasi nonprofit public. But it's really not a public entity. It's a private nonprofit. When you start talking about getting state financing for that, I think it gets very murky. So I guess I'd have some concerns with that.
We do have Stacey Schubert on the line from AHFC, so let me defer to her, and then I'll get to your question, Representative Rusher. So, Stacey, are you on the line?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Stacey Schubert. I'm the Director of Government Relations and Public Affairs for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Thank you for being here. And you've heard the testimony so far, and there's been some questions about repayment schedule or people being able to repay, nonprofits especially, and if the energy costs should go up and the savings aren't realized as were originally audited, what's the risk of default, and any other testimony you may have to add on those issues?
Mr. Chairman, I'm here with Eric Havelock from our mortgage department, who looks at these loans. I'd like to turn to him to answer any questions, but perhaps we could ask you to clarify specifically, is there a question about a particular project?
I don't believe we have a question about a particular project. There have been some questions, and your name has come up as a source of information. So, I think originally was asked is if the audit is the savings that the audit predicts, if that's to be used for the repayment schedule, and what if the predictions change or don't pan out as as expected, what happens then?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, this is Eric Havelock. I'm the lending officer for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. As I understand the question, you're asking what the corporation would do, Alaska Housing Finance, in the event of a payment default under this program. Is that correct?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, we have written procedures that we follow for loss mitigation, but essentially to the question, we're relying on the third-party professionals that are producing these audits. We're also using our internal resources to review the data, so there's a second set of eyes on this information, and we're fairly confident that the energy projections as of the date of the report are accurate, and that's what allows us to take it before our board for loan approval. Future changes are something that we would deal with as they came up.
Okay, thank you. We have some questions from the committee. Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, I understand the need here. I understand the what's trying to be accomplished and the benefits that there are to realizing energy savings and that. But I'm just wondering, government's role here in the business of loaning money to nonprofits, I'm just questioning whether that should be our role here. I don't know. She brought up churches, you know, and stuff like that. I'm not against churches. I'm just, where do we stop with the nonprofit? Where do we begin with the nonprofit? What is in the myriad of nonprofits that are out there? I just wonder what our role is here as a government to make loans that have risk involved, that the cost of what these improvements vary over the years. I'm just wondering about the whole our scenario that we belong or don't belong in this.
Representative Rauscher, through the chair, those are questions I respect. I mean, I think there's, however, fairly strong precedent in our government and our society for sort of carving out a role for the nonprofit community to play. Foremost, they don't pay taxes to government, and churches aren't taxed, and nonprofit organizations aren't taxed because they provide a service to society that government might otherwise be sort of compelled to deliver, presumably with less efficiency and greater cost. And so there's sort of a greater good, if you will, in supporting nonprofits and their myriad ways that government, municipal, and state supports nonprofits. I mean, I think, for instance, the conversation that catalyzed this whole idea and talking with the Foraker Group and other entities in Alaska, very sort of small potatoes financing that is going to have really large and real benefits for these nonprofits and the communities that probably are not going to walk down the street to the bank to finance, you know, replacing all the windows in the house or whatever. And I'm not a financing expert, but I also suspect that there's kind of a specialization to this kind of financing because you're looking at energy audits, and this is, you know, very energy specific and energy efficiency specific, and AHFC has a background in this, and it's kind of a niche that I'm not sure is really occupied by any other financing entity, so I'm not sure that there's sort of a displacement effect in any way. Again, AHFC could sort of correct me if I misspoke or overspoke there, but just some sort of thoughts from at least how I see it, if that's helpful.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, through the chair. Would you consider either waiting these loans or having a possibility within AHFC to wait them, or having a limit on these loans? I mean, I do hear the concerns of my other representatives here, and we are in a different era, and I didn't know if you maybe had. I was reading the legal services memo too, as far as addressing the concerns for the greater good, and it seemed like you pass the lemon test as far as churches, but it's still, it might be a way of coordinating the effects on the community and the effects on the revolving loan program.
Representative Johnston, through the chair, also good questions. I mean, I suppose a lending limit may have a role. I mean, I guess from my perspective, the more energy efficiency in Alaska, the better. It's not happening right now, and so I'd like to change things to sort of make it start happening. So, because this behavior is not present, to me, there's limited case for us trying to solve a problem that I don't think exists, because none of these investments are happening. None of this energy efficiency investment is happening. So I'm sort of take a little bit of pause in sort of putting parameters on this when we're that might have the effect of limiting what I think is a pretty unadulterated and unqualified good, which is not wasting energy and money in Alaska. But I mean, I do sort of see ideologically and intellectually where that's coming from, and you know, there may be some sideboards that make sense, and I'd be happy to consider those.
Representative Spotholz?
Yeah, I don't know that I have a question as much as a comment. I had some of the concerns that some of the other committee members had, particularly with making sure that we continue to retain access for those entities for whom this was originally intended. I think, you know, particularly in light of our sort of new fiscal situation and the fact that there are fewer grants available now, it's really important to make sure that we're meeting our sort of core mission. But given that one of the elements of this bill that gave me comfort was the fact that the originally intended recipients would retain priority, so that, you know, we can ensure that, you know, municipalities and boroughs and the entities for which it was originally intended can continue to have that need. Should there be a large demand for this revolving loan fund, it could be entirely utilized by the original intended recipients. But if it's not, I think that it does open up an opportunity for the nonprofit sector, which serves a lot of the needs that government can't or doesn't anymore, and often does them much more efficiently. And I'll give you a couple of examples that I can think of personally. I worked for the Salvation Army most recently, and one of the challenges that we ran into with some of our older facilities around the state of Alaska, which provide services such as food banks, soup kitchens, and serve as homeless shelters, was energy efficiency. And when the grant programs that used to have funding were available, that would have been an option. But when I had come onto the organization, those grant programs no longer existed. And while we weren't able to fund those projects outright, we could have been able to manage a financing, and that would have opened up some opportunities for us to be able to deliver those services more efficiently. And so I'd argue that there's an opportunity for us to ensure that we're allowing nonprofits to, you know, deliver those important services. And some of the other nonprofits that the state of Alaska funds through grant programs, which we've been looking at in Hess, there's another Hess committee member here, include homeless shelters, food banks, and Hope Cottages and other nonprofits which provide direct services on behalf of the state of Alaska. So I think there is actually a state interest in this. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Clemon.
First, I noted in the bill, in the packet, there's an amendment, not a numbered amendment, but it's A.1. Is that an amendment that you had submitted that you were hoping somebody makes that amendment to the proposed bill in committee?
Representative Clayman, through the chair, we've had a conversation with that effect, and the background to the amendment is conversations with the Regional Housing Authority community, including Cook Inlet Housing Authority, CIHA, to that effect.
Good.
through the chair, that Cook County Housing Authority is interested in participating as a regional housing authority?
Correct.
And then separate from that, this kind of question about the original intent was to help municipalities and school districts who have, for whatever reasons, have found little or no interest in taking advantage of this. If as a result we pass this legislation and suddenly the school districts and the municipalities wake up and they suddenly decide they want to borrow all kinds of money from this fund to pay for energy improvements, does that mean, if I'm the Salvation Army, as Representative Spondholz has discussed, and that we discover that all the money's been taken up by municipalities and school districts, that they would just have to say to the Salvation Army, I'm sorry, but all the available money has been used by others that happen with higher priority?
Representative Kleeman, through the chair, yes, I believe that's my understanding.
Okay.
Excuse me one second. I believe there's some technical difficulty. It's all good now? Okay. Go ahead, Representative Kleeman.
And then I have a follow-up question. I think for the AHFC folks, you all were involved with some loan funds for energy efficiency in the past. Is there any sense with this particular loan fund that you would expect to kind of use up your lending capacity quickly, or was this thought to be a fund that would be large enough to have a fair bit of flexibility from AHFC's perspective?
Are they still there?
Stacey Schubert, are you still on the line?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, this is Eric Havelock, the lending officer for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The fund was set up as a revolving loan fund, and so as payments would be made by eligible borrowers, the fund would replenish itself and be available for future loans.
And follow through the chair.
Yes, Representative.
The query I'd asked, which you may not have been paying full attention, in some of your prior revolving loan funds that you had for energy efficiencies, did you have any issues with running out of lending capacity in the revolving loan fund, or there tended to be money when people got their act together to apply for it?
Through the chair, Representative Klayman, we've not experienced a situation where we've run out of money for loan funds.
Before we proceed any further, maybe it's time to introduce the amendment. I believe Representative Spondholz, there's an amendment you'd like to move?
I move Amendment A1.
I'll object for the purposes of discussion.
So Amendment A1 explicitly clarifies that a regional native housing authority is established in AS 18.55.996 would be able to apply for loans under the new guidelines.
Okay. Any further discussion on this amendment? And we will get back to other issues, but Representative Spondholz has to leave shortly, so I want to get the amendment on the table.
Brief it is.
So I want to introduce the amendment now, and then we can get back to discussions on the bill as a whole or on the amendment. And we will not be attempting to pass this out of committee today, just so everyone knows that. Are there any questions on the amendment or discussions on the amendment? Any further discussion on the bill as a whole? Representative Rasher.
Thank you. Through the chair, I was one of the colleagues here. The question was basically that I had heard was, will this particular bill affect the amount of money in the future that may be available to those borrowing through the program as itself? And I believe the answer that I heard was that it hasn't in the past, but we're talking about a future piece of legislation. And I'm wondering, the answer of the question, I don't believe, was completely addressed the way I thought it was the question was intended. Am I wrong?
A question for the AHFC?
Yeah. second answer was it hasn't happened in the past, but we want to know will this affect it in the future, is what I'm saying.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Yeah. Representative
Rusher, I can't really explain how you heard the question, but I wasn't asking a question.
Well, then I'd like to ask that question.
Well, let me finish. The question I asked was about the past, because in my humble perspective, I can't really ask a bank or a lending institution to predict the future. All I can ask is what has been their past experience when they've had other revolving loan funds involving energy efficiency issues, which they've had, and so I wanted to find out what was their past experience based on history, and I believe that he answered my question.
I apologize. Okay. And I would like to know if there was any way to actually look at how this would affect in future.
Okay, Representative Rusher,
the volume of money that's available.
Okay, do you have a question for the AHFC?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead, Representative Rusher.
I was just wondering how this would affect any future monies that are available and how they view that this will pan out in the future as far as monies that will be available to everybody because of the added encumbrances.
Mr. Havelock, did you hear the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative, Last Housing would support the policy decisions as determined by the legislature. We believe that the motion before the body actually meets some of the original intent of the bill. As for future funding, we have a statutory cap on how much debt we can issue of $250 million. We understand there's legislative intent to add priority to the original identified borrowers in the bill, and we would be able to accommodate that, but we are up against the statutory cap.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate the qualification on that.
No problem. And before we go any further, back to amendment number one, I'm going to remove my objection. Is there any further questions or objections to amendment number one? Okay, if there's no further objection, amendment number one is adopted. Amendment number one is adopted. We can go back to discussion of the bill as a whole. And is there further discussion of the bill? Representative Wesley.
Yes, thanks. And again, this is addressed to AHFC. And out of curiosity, of that $250 million, before you have opened it up to nonprofits, how many takers have you had out there and I mean monetarily wise, or how many entities have applied for this for a commercial venture?
Through the chair, Representative, we get about two applications a year under this program, but as previously noted, we don't always get the loan. So we've actually closed one loan under this program for the city of Galena.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, Representative Westlake.
Thank you. And through the chair, how long has this program been available to the public?
Through the chair, Representative, the program, the statutes were adopted in 2010. We were able to get regulations in effect in October of 2010. The first set of applications came through in 2012, and again, we've been experiencing about two a year.
Any further questions? Representative Johnson?
I have a couple of questions, a couple of concerns. One is, I do think we have been a grant driven because there's been money available. I suspect that the municipalities will be looking for funds like this to do further work. So just because there hasn't been applications doesn't mean that there won't be. But so what I'm hearing, I actually have two concerns here. So this is, if I'm using up the only one, then let me know. But so my other one's more important. But my number one question, this question is, so the way I understand the municipal or school program would have been, that would be generally be a public building, that there would be a loan would go out and the improvements would be made on a public building, where what we're talking about here would be improvements made to just any private building. So we're not really, and if Is that right? I mean, it could be any building. It doesn't have to be a public building. Or does it have to be owned by the nonprofit or not owned by the nonprofit or just happen to be inhabited by the nonprofit?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, interesting. I think for an organization to make energy efficiency improvements to a building, it would need to be a building that they owned, because you can't, if you're renting a space, you can't just go in there and tear out the walls and stuff and insulation, or whatever the improvement might be. So, yeah, presumably ownership would be a necessary quality for financing anything. And I'm sure that's something that AHFC would keep in mind as well. Does that answer your question?
Well, yeah. I think I do have some concerns about it being, you know, not in the public sector. I mean, we're still a private nonprofit. We're doing upgrades too. But okay, so I have a second question,
Representative Johnson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you. On page 5, line 5, it says, includes a subdivision, subsidiary, or business enterprise wholly owned by a federally recognized tribe. So it talks about a business enterprise there, but then at the end, I think it's number 14 and 15 on page 5, it says, notwithstanding any provision of this section, the recipient of a loan under this section may not be a for-profit business enterprise. Would you just see, do those contradict each other, or how do you see that?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I have some recollection of this coming up last year in committee. And really quickly, before going there, Ms. Wilbur called to my attention on page 2, line 20, the verbiage owned by a tax-exempt entity, which may speak partly to your previous question. And I think maybe... speaking more broadly to the previous point about private nonprofits being non-public entities, and I think this notion of, are private organizations, including private nonprofits, soup kitchens, churches, arts organizations, whatever, should we be worried about them? I mean, I would just note that for years and years, government, be it the city of Palmer or the state of Alaska, has been giving money to these organizations. And that's what the capital budget has been for decades. And so if it's a problem to loan money to these organizations, it would sure seem to be a problem to give money to these organizations. And this is a huge step towards self-sufficiency and responsibility, I would state. So there's, I think, a consistency argument you could put forward here in terms of the properness of supporting the nonprofit sector. To the question about Section 7 and the language between lines 6 on page 5 and the lines 14 and 15 on page 5, I'm going to call in Barrett because I don't quite have a reliable recollection. I do remember this coming up, but I don't recall with detail what the answer is.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, Barrett Wilbur, staff to Rep. Christ Tompkins. I also believe that this concern came up last year, which is why we put in the explicit provision that that retrofits may not be used by purely for-profit business enterprises. In terms of the section which refers to business enterprises owned by a federally recognized tribe, I think that, especially looking through the rest of the bill, sometimes the law between state law and federal law, the way that it covers tribes and tribal entities, creates gray area. I know that that is an example of why we approved today's amendment to explicitly allow regional housing authorities to borrow under the bill. Maybe it would be better if we just took out that language, business enterprise, wholly owned by a federally recognized tribe. I think the last section creates some clarity that something that is purely a business entity cannot borrow, but if it's owned by a tribe, whether it is a federally recognized tribal entity or a business, both can be true. So that's why we added the last section to ensure that business enterprises cannot borrow from the fund.
Representative Clinton?
I just, in following up on the inquiry from Representative Johnson on the topic of essentially a for-profit role, I guess it's a good example because it's not much of an issue in Alaska, but we certainly have tribes in the lower 48 that have successfully established gambling casinos and hotels that are quintessentially for-profit operations, and some of the tribes, some of the casinos and hotels make quite a lot of money on reservation lands, and then those funds then go to support the operations of the tribe, but those subsidiaries of the tribe are essentially for-profit enterprises, and I take it that this particular language would essentially mean that if Casino X owned, which was a probably created as a separate subsidiary from the tribe for a whole bunch of liability and tax reasons, this would suggest that the casino couldn't apply for the energy efficiency loan because that particular entity is actually making money as on a for-profit basis, even though the profits go to the tribe, whereas the tribe down the street for its recreation center could very much take a loan out to do energy efficiencies in their recreation center, but they couldn't use it. And I'm assuming that, as I read this paragraph, L, that's kind of the circumstance that could arrive where you have some subsidiary that actually is designed as a for-profit enterprise, and that's the place that wouldn't be eligible for these funds. Is that the intent of that particular language, or am I getting ahead of the game?
Representative Kleeman, through the chair, that does align with at least my intent and thinking, and I mean it might behoove us, I'm speaking for Ms. Wilbur and myself, to go back and listen to committee deliberation from previous years also to sort of fully unpack some of the thinking. And I mean I think the intent is clear. We don't want business entities to be involved in this or participating in this. They're sort of for-profit in nature. If there are tweaks to the language to get to that end, a different means to that end, we're very open to it. But yeah, I think your summation resonates with me.
Maybe Representative Christ Tompkins, if some clarification can be brought forth next time that we talk about this bill, as far as being, we have a category of nonprofit, we have a category of a tribal corporation, and if a tribal corporation has a profit, for-profit sort of component, which I'm sure many of them do that are in Alaska that aren't casinos, their corporation's trying to make money, and would that disqualify them from, I mean, are they separate categories? Could one be a for-profit within the tribal structure that is also compatible with a non-profit? And I guess maybe some clarification can be brought forth to us.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Johnson, I think your line of questions, I think that makes good sense, and we can do some good homework and research and bring clarity to those questions.
Well, may I, Mr. Chair?
You sure may.
And forgive me for not knowing if exactly how this works, but can you ask for a legal opinion on that? Okay, so we can have that back
yes,
in our next.
Yes, we can, and that's, okay. That's what I want to bring forth in the future. Representative Westlake.
And thank you, and through the chair. AHFC, perhaps you can help me out here. The discussion, as you heard, is the nonprofit versus for-profit. Is there a difference on the rate exchanges if you did have a for-profit division that did apply for something along there? Is there anything favorable for either side there, for-profit versus nonprofit? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Westlake, this is Eric Havelock, Lending Officer for Alaska Housing Finance. Currently, our rate structure for this program does not differentiate between for-profit and not-for-profit entities.
Through the chair, thank you, sir.
Any other questions on this or other issues? I guess, Mr. Havelock, I have a couple questions about this program as a whole. It sounds like between 2012 and now, you've secured two loans in this program, and AHFC, what are the majority of your loans besides this program that you guys process?
Mr. Chairman, the majority of the corporation's business is residential housing finance through our tax-exempt first-time homebuyer program. Under this particular authority to make loans, we've done one loan to the city of Galena.
Okay, thank you. So there was some concerns earlier, questions earlier about the function of government loaning money to nonprofits and tribal entities, but obviously, we're very much in the business of loaning money to individual homeowners. So, making a loan to a nonprofit is sort of in line with loaning. It's a different type of loan, obviously, but the government or the state or state corporation here is loaning to private individuals, and this would now include nonprofits and tribal entities for the purposes of energy conservation. So you've only made one loan, so as far as the default rate, there's not really much to go by. Obviously, it's underutilized, and so, and as been mentioned by other members of the committee, there's buildings within their city or municipality that could use this, so maybe if they've been previously using grant money or they're under-educated about these loans, maybe something can be done to utilize more of this $250 million that's available for energy efficient loans. But any other questions from the committee? Well, I believe this bill has a zero fiscal note from the Department of Revenue, and there's no fiscal impact. And hearing no more questions from the committee, nothing more from the presenter.
No, Mr. Joe, just thank you for the questions, and we'll do some follow-up and be in touch with all committee members.
Okay, well, we'll adjourn this meeting right now, and we'll bring up this bill and also HB 80 at our next committee meeting on Thursday. This meeting's adjourned at 11:15.